You're listening to the Youth Crit Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at DecibelUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at DecibelUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
Your name?
Benna.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Podcast. I am your host, Kale Smith, and with me today is Spencer Cantor.
Hi, everyone.
And today we are going to be doing, we're talking about two different movies, and later on we'll have another guest on the show. We're going to have Jeremy Thal? Is it? I'm sorry, Jeremy, but anyway, we're going to have him on the show to talk about Hell and High Water, and but for now, Spencer and I are going to be discussing the already forgotten and movie. What are we talking about again? I already forgot.
I thought you knew what we were talking about. I'm just here.
It's some Sword and Sandals movie, but I can't remember. It literally came out this weekend, I can't remember.
It's got Jesus in it. I know that.
Wait, Jesus was in a movie recently?
Yeah.
That's like four different movies this year. God, you're not helping me.
Morgan Freeman was in there. I know that.
Okay, Morgan Freeman was in it. Christ, was Dr. Doom in it? I can't okay. Oh.
You remember?
Kubo.
Kubo. Yeah, totally.
No, but in all seriousness, we are talking about the Ben-Hur remake, and you're probably wondering, why am I talking about a movie that people have already forgotten? Well, first off, I feel like it's interesting that with a movie that's got the stigma that, you know, the Charlton Heston Ben-Hur has, it's interesting that even before it was released, it was Dead Upon Arrival, or is it Dead on Arrival? Either way, it's just interesting that it just, like, did not hit anyone, you know, because you would think a movie that has the the kind of classic, you know, or the name Ben-Hur would spark some attention, but really, I mean, even in its marketing, no one cared, no one saw it. I mean, I was looking at the view count for the YouTube trailer, and it was less than 5 million views. I mean, it's just one of those things that was like, huh.
Yeah. The only way people thought it is if they had to watch it like for the 5 seconds before they could click off.
Yeah. And I think that's a little sad. And also, I felt like it's odd that, you know, that Tamar Bekmambetov, a director that I've really liked over the years. He only gets to do a movie every 4 years for whatever reason, but it's interesting that, you know, no promotion about him involved. Maybe I should just tell people who Tamar Bekmambetov is.
I don't think a lot of your viewers probably know.
Okay, so Tamar Bekmambetov is the director who did Wanted as his first American movie. He did a couple other. He's a Russian filmmaker who worked on films. I think. Let me look it up. I can't remember the names.
I know.
But he also brought us Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter, and he produced earlier this year Hardcore Henry.
Yeah, I had no idea who he was until Kale told me. I'm like, Oh, that guy. Okay. It should be interesting.
I mean, I like Timur Bekmambetov because he brings an interesting style to his movies. Especially in like his Russian films like Night Watch, and I pulled up his IMDb, guys. Day Watch, and then Wanted was his first like American movie, and then Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter was, up until Ben-Hur, was his last more recent picture. And a lot of people seem to hate Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Never saw it.
Yeah, and that's also another thing. No one went to see it, but for me, I thought it did what Pride and Prejudice and Zombies should have done, which was taking itself serious like a real drama. And that way, it would have actually been, you know, an unintentionally funny film. Like, it would have been its own satire. Because I feel like the thing that Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter did so well was it was so pulpy. It was so, like, you know, energetic and lively and took itself so serious that you could actually kind of laugh, you know, you could both laugh at it but laugh more at the concept and more of, you know, how they're taking it so seriously. Whereas Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, it's like, you know, aren't we funny? Like, isn't this a funny concept? We're putting zombies in a, you know, Victorian era movie. Isn't that funny? Funny? Ha ha ha. No, it wasn't. No, because you were making yourselves, you purposely made yourselves a joke. So, but anyway, back to Ben-Hur. So my thoughts are on the Youth Critic blog. So, Spencer, what did you think of Ben-Hur?
It was okay. It's definitely forgettable for sure. You see it once and I would see no desire to see it again.
Mm-hmm.
Acting was okay. I've never seen the original. Me and Kale both haven't seen it.
I was going to, but after seeing it, and I even put the overture on the last podcast of the original or Charlton Heston movie.
Right.
I put it on there in planning to do it, but then after, but keep in mind, I watched the Ben-Hur remake after I finished this podcast or last week's podcast. So after seeing Ben-Hur, not only did I have no interest in seeing the remake ever again, I had no interest in seeing the original movie. I felt like if this was the Ben-Hur story, I thought, then this was it. I got it in 2 hours. Why would I need to sit through 3 hours and 40 more minutes of it? Yeah. And you're probably thinking, well, you're a film critic. Shouldn't you be watching classic films? And I'm like, that's not always the case. You know, I don't have to. That's not the case. And I'm not saying I will never, ever see Ben-Hur. It's just, have you sat through a 3 hour and 40 minute movie recently? Because that's really how long the original, that's how long the Ben-Hur movie is. I actually appreciate Timur Bekmambetov cutting to the shit. You know, that's the one thing I can say. That's one good thing I will say about Timur Bekmambetov is at least he just gets to it.
Yeah. If that movie would have been like 3.5 hours, the remake, I would have just probably died there.
I probably would have left. I've been bored.
Yeah, like, what's going on?
I mean, because
so much filler.
Because the thing is, you know, I can watch a Tarantino, and it's not that I can't watch a long movie. Because Spencer and I think last December we sat through The Hateful Eight 70mm,
which was really good.
You know, so and that was nearly 3 hours long, and I love Return of the King, which is 3 hours and 20. So, I mean, it's not that I don't love long movies, and I actually prefer some movies to be longer. However, I don't, after watching Ben-Hur, and if that's the real story of Ben-Hur, then I feel like I don't have any desire to watch a 3 hour version of that story, if that makes any sense. But anyway, we're getting on a tangent. So, my thoughts on the movie, I didn't hate it. I thought Toby Kebbell, again, giving a really good performance in a mediocre film. Like, because for me, I feel like in his last couple movies, Fantastic Four, Warcraft, I won't put Dawn of the Planet of the Apes in that category because that's actually a great movie and he gives a great performance. But those last couple movies I mentioned, I actually liked him in both of those movies. It's just he's in bad films. Or in the case of Warcraft, he's in kind of a mediocre, you know, movie. So for me, I feel terrible for Toby Kebbell because he is a really good actor. And him and Jack Houston in this movie give great performances. Like, they are giving, you know, excellent performances along with, you know, Morgan Freeman. Yes, Morgan Freeman has dreadlocks.
Oh, God, we didn't get to that yet.
He has dreadlocks, people. But he still, you know, he still carries the gravitas in his character. He's still an interesting character to watch on screen. And even, you know, you brought up Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
Jesus is in this movie played by Rodrigo Santoro, I think. I think I got that right because I had to re-edit my review because I found out the right spelling of his name. Professional.
Got that spelling right.
Professionally, not professional, as my colleague Diego Crespo would say on the Waffle Press. So Rodrigo Santoro I thought was a really good Jesus. But we'll get to more of why I feel like the usage of the character in that movie was poorly handled. But for now, let's kind of go back to Ben-Hur as a character. So, Spencer, for me, I didn't really think... I thought Ben-Hur was kind of given a procedural story or procedural arc.
Right.
From this peaceful character to a vengeful character to what we get to at the end. And for me, while Jack Houston was giving a great performance, it was still really boring for a long time to watch Jack Houston play this character.
Yeah, I definitely feel it was like a by-the-numbers kind of thing, because you start out, he's like this peaceful like prince or whatever, right?
Well, he's not really a prince. He's kind of like a... You know how like they're in Game of Thrones, they have like these lords?
Yeah.
That they're not necessarily part of the, you know, the king, the queen, king and queen's family, but they are like respected.
Yeah.
That's what, you know, Judah Ben-Hur is, and that's what his family are. They're kind of like, you know, they're a respected family in Jerusalem.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Okay, so he's part of this respected family. You know, he's all nice, and he tries, you know, do the right thing possible. And then, you know, we go on, he gets betrayed by his brother. And then it's just this revenge story. It's like, I pretty much need to seek revenge on my brother and kill him for what he did to me.
And my mother, my sister. Mm-hmm. And the drunk uncle. We can never forget about drunk uncle.
Drunk uncle. Rest in peace, drunk uncle. But, yeah, like, if you've seen Ben-Hur before, this remake, it's pretty much the same telling, I think. Because, like...
And we should clarify, we haven't seen the the Charlton Heston or the silent film or the other four different adaptations. Or three. I'm losing count on how many there are.
Oh, there'll be another one soon. Oh, I found out, I was like researching this, whatever. Well, not really researching, but just looking online, and then there was like a TV miniseries before this one came out.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, I remember seeing that on IMDb.
Yeah, I was like, wait, what?
When I was doing research when I was looking up cast member names for this movie.
I thought, was this the movie? No, this is like a miniseries. Okay, whatever.
But, yeah, I mean, the thing with Ben-Hur is it probably is a long, epic story, much like The Odyssey.
Yeah.
You know, Homer's epic poem, The Odyssey. However, I don't really... However...
Just in those levels.
Yep. Yeah, it's like, for me, I didn't really find it a compelling story, and I know I'm just basing off of my opinions off of this movie. However, I didn't really find the story compelling, mostly because, you know, you know, because one of the things I hated that Tim Arpick-Mimitev did with this movie is he kind of made it less epic. Like, he didn't really make it an epic, big, you know, big scope movie. He kept everything tight and close like you would in a very mediocre studio action movie.
Yeah.
And that's the thing I've always... And the thing is about Tamar Bimbatov is someone who's watched, you know, his American films, is that Tamar Bimbatov knows how to create action that's different from other filmmakers. Like, he has his action style. But here, he's kind of just like, you know, I'm going to get a GoPro. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to keep everything tight in POVs, and I'm going to shake the camera a lot.
Oh, God, there's so much of that.
And it's just like, it felt like Tamar Bimbatov, you know, A, had his hands tied and also was neutered, you know, throughout the production. Because, you know, because also another thing that Tamar Bimbatov does is he's a very R-rated filmmaker. So a lot of the violence is cut down.
Yeah, I definitely think if given like the right chance, this could have been an R-rated movie.
Yeah, and that chariot scene is in the remake. It is pretty.
It's pretty violent.
It is pretty violent, but I'm almost certain that it could have been more violent.
Oh, for sure.
And the slave ships hitting each other.
Yeah, that was definitely another highlight.
That could, I mean, they took it as brutal. I mean, that's Tamar, like, I mean, when I say like Tamar Bimbatov, I think tried to take it as far as he could, but I felt like he, again, was neutered. Like, because A, he had $100 million budget, which still is like, is that all? Like, is that all you got? Is that all you got, Paramount? I mean, you gave the Turtles 2 135.
Dang. Turtles beat y'all.
Yeah. So, but then again, it seemed like Paramount did not give two shits about this movie.
Like the rest of the world.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They're all... That's... Man, that is sad. You're
like, studio. Seriously, who really wanted this remake?
I didn't, but I mean, I'm always gonna... But I'm always, you know, in for a, you know, a Tim Arpick-Mimitev movie. So.
Well, that's you.
Yeah, that's just me, though.
He loved this director. I'm not even gonna try to pronounce the name because I know it would butcher it.
Yeah, don't even, yeah, it is a little tough because it is a little tough, but so overall, you know, I feel like the movie had just this overwhelming problem of it just wasn't epic. It wasn't grand. The chariot scene is, and the slave ships crashing into each other.
Yeah.
They're highlights. But they're only the two biggest action scenes in a 2-hour film.
Yeah.
Where, you know, where the film, it tries really, really hard to make you care for all the characters and all of their motivations. But in the end, it feels like the theme, like they didn't quite know how to handle the themes of Ben-Hur.
Yeah.
Which, are you ready to get into the ending?
Let's do it.
All right, we're going to spoiler territory, but I don't think anyone cares, so if you do care, I don't know. Anyway.
I guess just keep listening.
Yeah, I don't care. Anyway, so the ending of the movie is, after the chariot race scene, Ben-Hur does defeat Mycellus.
Mythala.
I think it's plural. Mycellus.
Mycellus?
I think so. Yeah, it's... I'm almost sure. I'm almost sure. Mycella.
Okay.
Mycella. Okay.
One for me.
All right. Again, I keep hearing different... at different times in the movie.
We'll just say Toby. Cable.
So, Ben-Hur defeats Toby, and then there's this great scene with Morgan Freeman and the Roman Empire Emperor Pontius Pilate, if I'm reading that correctly. Pontius Pilate, Roman Emperor Pilate.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great scene where Morgan Freeman comes up to him and is like, you know, I'm sorry for your loss, or I have condolences for your loss. And the pilot is like, no, I won. I turned everyone into bloodthirsty Romans.
Yeah.
And for me, that was a really chilling scene, and I felt like that could have been a really good, like, yeah, we could, spend a couple minutes kind of tying things up, but that would have been a really good ending. It's to kind of leave, you know, with this idea of, well, shit, we all failed. We failed to defeat, you know, we helped our own enemies out. I thought that was a really good way, really good, hard way to end the movie. But then we get 10 minutes, you know, tacked on to see basically a 10-minute version of Passion of the Christ. And for me, watching this, I was like, oh my God, we're going full on. We're watching this, you know, Jesus Christ character who has only appeared whenever the script needed him to be here. And for me, so to have him come up at the end and just have him basically force the theme on us, which, I mean, yes, it's a great theme and all, but I felt like it was so tacked on. It felt like we went to a whole other movie at this point. I felt like we transitioned from Ben-Hur's movie to Jesus Christ's movie, and then back to Ben-Hur's movie.
Because, like, oh, yeah, this movie's about Ben-Hur, not Jesus Christ. Gotta fix that.
Yeah, it just felt so forced and so tacked on and really rushed.
Yeah.
Like, you know, well, let me let you speak on this. Like, what did you think about this moment?
Like, just the whole final 10 minutes, whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah, honestly, I think I feel with Kale here. I definitely feel like it was tacked on. I understand, you know, they were trying to get their message of, like, you know, Judas just, you know, give, accept, you know, forgiveness and give forgiveness to his brother for all his actions that he's done, not seek revenge and try to kill him. And that's what the message was Jesus dying on the cross and paying for everybody's sins. But yeah, it felt tacked on, and it could have been, I understand, like, why it was there, but it could definitely have been executed in a much better way, I think.
Yeah. And I'm not trashing on the theme. I really do like the idea, and I do love that in the end, it tried to be more of a, you know, forgiveness is more important than vengeance.
Yeah.
And I loved it, but it felt so like, it felt like a really hard left turn. So really, I'm more upset over the execution of it than anything.
Yeah, honestly, I think you could have left out the part about, like, you just died on the cross, because pretty much everybody knows that. I think you could have left that part out and just went on to that. I think he really didn't need that.
Well, I mean, and also, I think before Paramount completely gave up on it, they were going to do, like, a whole trilogy.
Of Ben-Hur?
Of Ben-Hur.
Like, yeah. Divide the original movie into it, or, like...
Like, I think they were going to divide the story into three parts.
Maybe two would have been okay, but three, ugh.
Like, I mean, because I think they were going to do, like, a story of Ben-Hur working his way up to defeating, ultimately, Pilate or whatever.
Hmm.
I mean, I don't know. I just remember reading that.
Well, I think that idea is totally scrapped now.
Yeah, I think, oh yeah, it's definitely, that's Ben-Hur sequel's never going to happen. Never in a million years.
It's going to probably be at least 20 years before we get another remake, if even.
Yeah.
No one's touching this.
Maybe an all-female Ben-Hur movie.
Is Paul Feig directing it?
If Paul Feig's Ben-Hur. May the power of Ben-Hur compel you. God. Anyway. So Ben-Hur, I really don't have much, because when I watched the movie, I was bored almost halfway through. There are some shining moments, and I do agree that Jack Huston and Toby Kebbell are great actors that keep choosing mediocre films.
Yeah.
But in the grand scheme of things, I would say if you're mildly interested in it, which I'm guessing the world isn't, even mildly interested in it, I would just say just give it a chance on a free Redbox rental.
Don't even pay like the $1.50 or whatever. Make sure it's free
or discounted. Because for me, this wasn't the worst movie of the year.
No,
But the biggest sin this movie makes is just not being, it's just not being grand and epic, and not being, this big,
It just doesn't live up to the Ben-Hur name.
Yeah, and I think that's really its biggest sin. In terms of remakes, I think that's the worst. Is you don't live up to is you at least don't live up to the feeling or the stigma is attached to your movie or attached to the predecessor.
Well, I will give this. It did have a hard hole to like come back into because like the original is like so widely regarded. It won was nominated for 11 Academy Awards. Like that was a tough hole to climb anyway. So I mean, I give it points for trying, but it definitely is just. It's not Ben-Hur. Like,
yeah. So anyway, folks, that is Ben-Hur. We'll be back in a few minutes. We'll be back in a few minutes to discuss Hell or High Water, and then we'll talk about the next couple of weeks. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Spencer, for coming on. Before you go, do you want to plug anything?
You can follow me on Twitter at BustaSpence. I don't tweet much, but when I do, it's gold.
Awesome. Thanks, everybody. We'll be back in just a couple minutes.
You know, the bank loan, just enough to keep your mama poor. Thought they could swipe her land.
It's a big bank.
It's too big.
That's what she said.
Now they can foreclose on Friday. So come hell or high water,
get the money to the bank on Thursday.
And then you are free and clear.
Little brother,
let's go get that money.
Good morning, folks. Open the drawers.
You got a gun on you, old man?
You damn right I got a gun on me. Y'all gonna steal my gun, too?
We ain't stealing from you. We're stealing from the bank.
You hear about these bank robberies?
You may get to have some fun before they send you.
I may have one hunt left in me.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Podcast. I am your host, Kale Smith, and we are back for part two of this week's podcast. I am joined by Jeremy Tao.
Hello.
And so now we're going to move on to Hell or High Water, the new, indie film from David McKenzie and screenwriter Taylor Sheridan. You might know Taylor Sheridan from his screenwriting work on Sicario, and you might know David McKenzie on Startup, I think. I think that's right, Startup. With Jack O'Connell. I really like this movie a lot. I think it's an interesting discussion. It's not as cerebral as Sicario, but then again, I think Sicario's cerebralness comes from Denis Villeneuve. It came from the director Denis Villeneuve, where I think David McKenzie here is pulling off a more modern, more contemporary Western. And with that, I think, out of that, we have four really great performances from Ben Foster, Chris Pine, Jeff Bridges, and Gil Birmingham, sorry. So, with that, further ado, I'll post my review on the site a little later. So, Jeremy, what did you think about Hell or High Water?
Well, I personally liked it a lot. I thought it was a great movie. The performances were fantastic. My favorite being Ben Foster's character. Right. When I was thinking about it earlier, and it's kind of hard to tell who the true lead actor is if you really think about it. I was thinking, is it Bridges? Is it Pine? You know,
are you talking more like who is the lead actor or the protagonist?
The lead actor.
Okay.
Yeah, the lead actor. With the protagonist clearly being Chris Pine. But I was when Benicio del Toro was snubbed a nomination for Sicario, I thought it was insulting.
To be fair to the Academy, there were a lot of great supporting acting performances.
Right.
But still, Benicio del Toro should have been nominated.
Right. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Foster, Pine, and Bridges were all nominated for Academy Best Awards. Actor. I would say Foster might be under the supporting actor category.
I would agree. And yeah. I mean, I thought Gil Birmingham did another great supporting performance as well, but I'm totally for all the people you mentioned getting Oscar nominations.
Right, and it was I really liked Jeff Bridges' character. He really portrayed it well, I thought.
Yeah, because I agree with you on that as well, because it's off-putting at first because you think, oh, he's an old white racist character, but because of the dynamic he has with the character Alberto Parker, played by Birmingham, it kind of works off well, even though it is still a little bit of racism, but
right.
It's not
that kind of ties back into the whole Western theme of, you know, there were
right, like no one was just
themes with Native Americans and
yes.
Mexicans.
And even more interesting in that in the movie is I love how there is like a correlation between the banks are kind of like they're now kind of like the army that came the army that came in and moved the Indian settlements to the Midwest.
Right. And I think I can safely say that this is the first great film, and I'll call it a great film, that dealt with the economic crisis of 2008. I mean, like, for example, at the beginning of the film, it's not really a spoiler, but we see some graffiti on a wall that says something like, three tours in Iraq, but no bailout for me. Like, that kind of sends a very clear message immediately after the movie starts that the small guy in this small Texan town, they're being hurt, you know. They are hurt.
I agree. I didn't get to read the whole thing because the camera, it is like a, you know, blink and you miss it moment.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a really good like little moment in the movie that kind of subtly sets the tone.
Mm-hmm.
And by subtle, I mean it is a blink and if you miss it, you know, the graffiti thing. And I think that's great that it didn't linger on it. It just followed. I think it was the first bank teller that gets robbed. That, because you said it's in the opening shot, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So. Yeah, so I mean that's a really good way, and also it's even that, you know, motif comes back over and over again with, you know, the cowboys talking about, you know, them being robbed by the bank. Then you have the financial lawyer coming in saying that your mom was kind of being robbed by the banks anyway.
Right.
So again and again, we're presented in this, you know, motif of. Like, people are being, you know, pushed out of their homes, but it's not the army anymore. It's, you know, more civilized. It's a more civilized version of the army.
Right. And we see the support for these two brothers from the local townspeople several times throughout the movie. You know, just people refusing to cooperate with the Texas Rangers, giving information, refusing to pick them out of a not a lineup, but like a group of pictures or whatnot, and you know,
they're not just willing to. It's almost like they're like, it's almost like they're Robin Hood.
Right, exactly.
Like Robin Hood and Little John.
Yeah, I think there's a line even in the trailer talking about. When they're talking about the bank being robbed, and one guy's like, "Oh, you mean that same bank that's been robbing me for the past 30 years?" It definitely ties into that Robin Hood motif of, If these boys can get away with it, then, you know, so be it. You know.
Right. And for me, there's been, in going back to the films that's covered the financial crisis, I mean, we did have The Big Short.
Right, right.
But that was more of, this is how it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And while we've had more subtle films kind of talk about, like, you know, the whole crisis of everyone, you know, fighting for the American dream, we've had several movies recently, like Pain and Gain, The Wolf of Wall Street, The Great Gatsby, both illustrating the theme of, we're willing to work, we're willing to fight for the American dream, even if it's not legal.
Right.
And of course, and even like last week, we got War Dogs, mm-hmm. again, that kind of played again to that motif. So it's interesting that this and a lot of other, this movie and a lot of other movies are commenting on, that approach to gaining the American dream.
Right. And I think this trend that's going on right now, like you said, with War Dogs and The Big Short and Hell or High Water is, you know, I could be completely wrong on this, but I think it took time for us to rebound as a country before we could comfortably make art out of it. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
it's been several years now since 2008, and...
Well, I mean, we're just now being able to talk about post 9/11.
Right.
So, I mean, so of course, you know, well, it is, but kind of, it's almost insensitive, or I guess it is insensitive to talk about, like, problems of America,
mm-hmm.
Or problems that people have, and kind of showcase the issue of it right there and then, unless you're Oliver Stone, and then you can, I guess, just go crazy.
Yeah.
So I think it's appropriate now that we're kind of in the, you know, election year, and then we have, you know, and then we got, you know, a few years ago, those movies, they're now being retrospective of what's happened, you know, the last pre-Obama administration.
Mm-hmm.
So going into this movie, you know, my expectations were kind of lower. Because I didn't really know what to expect. I wasn't that amazed by the trailer.
I agree totally.
But when I walked in, I mean, I was amazed by the filmmaking. And I didn't even realize it was directed by the startup guy.
Mm-hmm.
Who, you know, and if anyone hasn't seen that movie, it's a really good examination. And yeah, it is, again, a little bit more cerebral than this. But still, it's like, it's very well made.
Right. And I'd kind of forgotten that Sheridan, the writer of Sicario, had written this as well until I sat down in the theater and I remembered. I mean, I hate to say it and I may sound ridiculous, but from the trailer and just from what I'd heard of the movie, I thought that it was a pretty simple script to write in terms of the story. And
right.
I think I can still say that it kind of is, but it's structured and it flows so well. And obviously the performances just, you know, took it to another level.
Yeah, this movie owes a lot to its performances.
I think we talked briefly in class yesterday how we were both kind of concerned about how Chris Pine was going to do.
Yeah, because he still, even when you watch him in the first half of this movie, he still has the pretty boy looks.
Right.
I mean, they do as much as they can to make him look dirty, but mm-hmm. still, it's like, yeah, this is James T. Kirk I'm looking at.
Exactly.
So, but, I mean, in the second half, I mean, he stepped up his game.
Right.
And it shows Pine a lot. It shows a lot for Pine.
Yeah, it showed his range for sure. And it was interesting to see the dynamics between the two brothers, with Pine being truly good at heart, and Foster, I think I can say, is truly bad at heart. But they come together to do this streak of robberies, and I mean, they're, you know,
forced upon it,
right?
I mean, you can see in Toby's eyes, he's very inexperienced and very worrisome about this entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you see it clearly that, you know, he's not comfortable with it.
Right.
But he's kind of forced into it because if, you know, if they lose his farm, then, A, you know, what does he have left to give his kids? Because also what's interesting about the character, Chris Pine plays a character named Toby Howard. You know, what's interesting about this character is he realizes that he's not the best father, and he realizes he's not been a really great person in real life. But I mean, he is better than his brother in that he's never been arrested and never been, you know, a jailbird. But you can see he's made personal mistakes.
Right. You know, just a couple being his back child support payments.
Yes.
You know, just things like that where he truly does love his sons. And I think it's hinted pretty well that he still loves his ex-wife as well. And he's just, this is his last option to do these bank robberies.
And in the end, you feel bad for him because he's lost, you know, the last little part of his family. I mean, he still has his wife and children, his ex-wife and sons, but, I mean, he's lost his brother in this. Like, there's no more of, like, his mom and dad or his brother. And I'm going to just spoil, minor spoiler, at the end of the movie, Ben Foster's character Tanner is killed. I won't say how, but you know, there's a scene afterwards where Toby, Chris Pine's character, is in a bar drinking, and Chris Pine doesn't say anything, but you can just see the remorse, the regret.
Also a little bit of the appreciation of the sacrifice that his brother made for him and his family.
Yeah. Cuz I mean, I don't think they would have gone far if Tanner hadn't distracted everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really bittersweet ending. And it will haunt, haunt that character forever, but also, you know, that whole case will haunt, you know, the characters, Marcus and, well, it will haunt, you know, Marcus Hamilton as well.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Bridges' character, which I thought Jeff Bridges did an excellent job. He could have easily done his true grit character again,
right,
which he did in RIPD.
Mm-hmm.
But I really bought into his performance. Like, yeah, he's not a clean, you know, not the, you know, white knight, but I bought into his character.
Yeah. So in this movie, Bridges plays a Texas Ranger who is, I don't know, 3-4 weeks away from retirement.
Yeah, it's that cliche. Like, he's a couple weeks away from retirement.
Yeah, and he wants to end his career with a bang. So he takes on these two brothers.
He takes on the case.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's interesting to see a now, you know, much older Jeff Bridges take on this role and play it so well and play it so much differently than what I honestly expected him to portray it as.
Yeah, and I'm not saying his true great character...
There's a hint of it.
Yeah, but it's not. Yeah, but I'm not saying that it would be a terrible thing for him to kind of replay that character again. But then again, I don't want the same thing always when he does that kind of movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like he brought something different in it, and I thought he did an excellent job. And he was working off of a great character actor that never gets a lot of credit, and to be fair, he's not in a lot of great movies either. Like, Gil Birmingham is mostly known for, like, the Twilight movies, for being, I think, Jacob's dad in those movies.
Never saw them, Gil.
It's okay. It's okay. No one should have to see them. But yeah, so I thought this was a great, you know, and I thought Bridges in Birmingham worked off great.
Yeah.
So overall, what did you think of the filmmaking? We've already dived into it a little bit.
Yeah.
But
I thought it was great. I mean, you really did get the, I guess, modern Western feel to it right away. Very, very soon in the movie, you got that feel. You knew what you're in for. Like, it started off, the story started off very fast.
Mm-hmm.
And you got the true feeling of what you're about to get, you know, very early on.
Yeah. For me, I enjoy, like, there's a lot of tracking shots in the movie.
Yeah.
And for me, I liked those little touches. And I loved the movie's pace. I love how it builds.
Yeah.
It builds and builds to the final bank robbing scene.
Yeah.
And when you get to the final bank robbing scene, it's really intense.
Yeah. It's like each bank robbing scene, there are many climaxes, essentially.
Yeah.
The most interesting one to me, though, was another minor spoiler, I guess, but there's one robbery when Ben Foster's character goes in and robs a branch, like, impromptu, without his brother.
Yeah, he just randomly does
it. Yeah, they're eating at a diner, and he tells his brother to pick up the tab while he goes to the bathroom, and he walks next door and... Robs the bank.
Basically to get his brother's child support money.
Yeah, and another reason, well, I don't know if I should say the other reason of why, the main reason why they're robbing the banks, I guess.
I mean, we kind of already have said it.
It's essentially to pay the reverse mortgage and the back taxes on the family farm property.
Mm, yes.
So
yeah, and that's really the cause of the movie, and that's kind of where all this, you know, the Robin Hood themes, and also, I mean, and there's plenty of Westerns about, like, paying the debt back.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, you have all these Western archetypes, and I don't know, I just feel like they did it in a great way.
Mm-hmm.
So now that we've been talking about how great this movie is, and we talked about it a little bit with the actors, but what do you think overall, does this movie have any chance with Oscars? Cause I'm a little bit more skeptical.
I think it might get a few nominations in various categories. I think it might be some of the acting categories where they'll get their nominations, but it might be another one of these situations where they don't win anything. And
yeah.
And you know, just to go off on a side thing right here, like, it's a common thing right now, obviously, with sequels, prequels, reshoots, remakes, and all that. And you know, my two favorite movies so far this year have been Hell or High Water and The Nice Guys, two original stories.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody saw The Nice Guys.
I mean, no. I did, but yeah, I see your point.
And you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Hell or High Water didn't make more than, you know, maybe 25 million in the theaters. Like, we complain about how there's no more originality in Hollywood and in scripts and in movies, but when these amazing original movies come out, nobody goes to support them in the theaters, and that's what's going to have to happen. You have to support them in the theaters and hand your money over to let them know that, like, we want good original movies.
Yeah, because, I mean, yeah, that's the thing, and that's kind of why I wanted to kind of do, like, that's why I kind of redid my whole episode, because I was just going to talk about, like, Ben-Hur and a couple of the other movies that came out this week. But I saw this movie and I was like, you know, this movie deserves more.
Yeah.
This movie doesn't deserve for me to just be like, eh, I'll write a review and let, you know, let everything, let the cookie crumble. I really do want to support this film.
Yeah.
Because it's worth checking out.
Yeah.
Like, and if you really do want original, more original movies, then go see this, because these actors all took a pay cut to make this movie.
Right. Very low budget. I don't know what the number is, but it's... and I mean, yeah, you might have to drive a little bit further. You might have to go out of your way, but I mean, that's something I don't mind doing to support original film. If you're around the Gainesville area, I believe the closest place you can see it, I saw it at the Mall of Georgia.
That's where I saw it too. It is at the Mall of Georgia, and it will still be there this weekend.
Yeah.
As anywhere else, I think it's still it'll be in Atlanta.
And it's at AMC 18, I believe, as well.
Yes, I think Colonial?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is losing some theaters this weekend, but it's still doing, but I mean, it's still out, and I highly recommend people to check it out. And also, The Nice Guys is coming out on Blu-ray, so...
also a great movie that you should support.
Yes. Go rent the Blu-ray. Go buy it. Whatever. Go, you know, support the DVD sales.
That's the thing. Just, you know, backtracking a bit. You have to spend a little bit of your money to support these original movies. I mean, you've got to let them know that, like, there is a desire for original movies still. You know, we just... Can we talk about one thing real quick? Just
go ahead.
Gail, do you think that we've seen the end of the split finale system, like the last Harry Potter, the last Hunger Games, the last...
now, yes.
Yeah, because, you know, I don't know the true name, like the Divergent series, is that correct?
The Divergent series is, yes.
The last movie, if I'm not mistaken, has been pulled... from a theatrical release and is going straight to DVD
and TV.
TV. Okay. And I think that's awesome because it's just utterly ridiculous that became a thing. And
well, I mean, I can understand why they did it for,
it's money.
Harry Potter.
It's also the content, there's a lot.
Well, it's not just money, but for Harry Potter, I can see wanting to do justice. And the only way to have done justice is do a 4-hour film. But, you know, for Twilight, it's a little bit more difficult. It's a little bit more difficult to see it. Hunger Games, I saw both Mockingjay movies, and I thought how they did the split was okay, but I can see they could have made a 3-hour film.
Yeah.
Hobbit's probably the worst for me.
Yeah.
In that they did 3 movies out of a 300-page book.
Yeah.
And for me, I felt like that was completely unnecessary. And then Avengers recently... change their titles. And while the Russos back in May, they said, you know, of course, they said they were going to change the titles because they wanted each of those movies to be their own distinct story. But still, I mean, they've changed it. It's now Avengers Infinity War for the May 2018.
Yeah.
And then they'll give us the title right after, they'll give us the title for the next one around when Infinity War comes out.
Okay.
So, I mean, yeah, I think we're pretty much done. And also, even more, Fox, I don't know if you've heard of the Maze Runner series.
Yeah, I've heard of it. I haven't seen them, but I've heard of it.
They're not splitting the third book, or they're not splitting the third movie into two parts. And that was always the plan.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's pretty much dead.
Yeah.
It's dead for now, which I guess is kind of a good thing. I mean, I didn't necessarily mind it other than The Hobbit, but I mean, I understand the criticism behind it.
Yeah, I read all the Hunger Games books, and I saw Mockingjay Part 1, and man, I was pretty, I left the theater with a pretty bad taste in my mouth. And even knowing that the actual coup was in the second part, I still haven't watched it, nor do I really care to see it. Like, I'll watch it one day, I'm sure, but
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, so Back to Hell or High Water.
Yeah.
Please go and support it. Oh, and the Nice Guys. I'm looking at the internet right now, and the Nice Guys Blu-ray is out on August 23rd. I think you can go ahead and buy it on iTunes and Amazon. I'm not 100% sure. Wait a minute. Oh, so I think the Nice Guys is already on Blu-ray. According to this recording, it should be out on Blu-ray. Yeah, you can buy it now.
Watch it.
Yes, watch it.
Gosling is hilarious.
Russell Crowe is
great, yeah.
But for Hell or High Water, please check it out.
Support original movies. Support original movies. Mm-hmm. Give your money away to watch, you know, to let them know that this is what we want. There's still a desire for original movies like these.
Yes. So, Jeremy, do you have any final thoughts on Hell or High Water?
Go watch it. Just appreciate it and enjoy it. That's all I've got to say.
All right. And I'm going to echo Jeremy's thoughts here. And that's it for our show this week. Next week, we are going to be talking about Stranger Things and the 30th anniversary of Stand By Me. And that's it for next week, folks. Thank you all for listening.
See ya.
Oh, wait. Jeremy, did you want to plug something, or you're good?
I believe I'm good right now.
Okay. Bye, everybody.
See ya.